You're on KCSB 91.9 FM, Santa Barbara. Welcome to Radio Causeway. I'm Pav.
I'm Tim. This is your weekly showcase, bringing you timely interviews and bridging your world of music.
Started 7 years ago, USCSB's English Broadside Ballad Archive has since accumulated 3 NEH grants, a BSEX Digital Prize, and expanded beyond its initial ambitions to catalog a greater collection of early English ballads. Patricia Fumerton, Professor of English and Director of the English Broadside Ballad Archive here at UCSB, is with us today to chart, and in the words of the EBA website, not only its work of scholarly preservation, but the journey of exploration it has launched.
In the second half of this show, we'll have some ballad-inspired music in our weekly Strange News. Stay with us.
Welcome to Radio Causeway. This is Pav.
I'm Tim.
We're here today with Professor of English here at UCSB, Patricia Fumerton, and she's also the director of the EBA Archive, or the English Broadside Ballad Archive. Patty, first off, congratulations. Not only did the British Society for the 18th Century Studies award you their digital prize last year, but the Ballad Archive received its third NEH grant this year. And on top of that, you've just had an edition of essays published titled Ballads and Broadsides in Britain, 1500 to 1800.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here with us.
Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to get started with, I always get started with these building block questions. What exactly is an English broadside ballad?
Oddly enough, that's a question that we frequently ask ourselves. More so as the project has developed and we've archived more and more of them. Because the form actually changes over time from the 16th through the 18th into the 19th century. But what we have focused on from the very beginning is the heyday, the high period of the ornamental black letter broadside ballad. And that has a very distinctive form. It is called a broadside because it's printed on a large, broad sheet of paper on one side, so broadside. And it's printed mostly in black letter, which is what we today would call Gothic font. Illustrated with many woodcuts and other ornaments, and with a printed tune title. So it is a multimedia artifact that is art, song, poetry, and historical document of cultural issues that are going on in the period. And people would paste them up, they would carry them around, they would pass them around and sing them on the streets and in their homes.
So you'd mentioned multimedia. So multimedia isn't something that was just created a decade ago. It's something from before?
Yes.
When exactly are the English broadside ballads, when did they become prominent? Or at least in your collection, what do we have there?
Well, with the rise of print in the 15th century, which really doesn't take off in England until the 16th century, almost immediately they're being printed. But they're very simple artifacts in the late 16th century is when you start seeing printing in broadsides, the late 15th century into the 16th century, and then the ballads start coming out in the 16th century. They're basically little ornament, no tune titles printed on them, but as the 16th century comes to its close, you start getting hundreds and thousands, up to millions of them being printed. They were the most disseminated form of print by the early 17th century in the period. And they only cost half a penny to a penny, so that made them the cheapest form of print. So they are a form of mass marketing in the early modern period.
Some of them are actually used for advertising too, right? I mean, just for announcing plays, or what exactly are the subjects of some of these ballads?
Well, why they are so popular is that they cover every subject you can imagine. You can't name a topic that a ballad doesn't cover. Their aim is to appeal to every sector of the populace, but especially the middle to lower classes who can afford to buy them. And it's the only kind of literature that can't afford to buy. So their topics, they would cover strange births, monstrous births, earthquakes, the earth opening up and swallowing some sinner. And they would often have a wonderfully decorative woodcut of this monstrous bird, this two-headed monster, something like you would see in the National Enquirer.
Yeah.
They had that topic and appeal. They would cover religious issues, political issues, a more sort of topical occasional issues like the raising of rents by landlords, the hoarding of corn to raise the price of corn, lots of ballads about marital relations, gender relations, debates between the sexes, lots of ballads about sex, just period. Very frank sexuality in ballads. So there isn't a topic that anybody is talking about or interested in that ballad doesn't address. They also often, in order to, again, get the biggest audience they can, is they'll have dialogues in them and debates in them. Mm-hmm. So they take both sides of an issue. And that way, if you're interested in a ballad, you'll buy the ballad because you're on one side or you're on the other. And they'll even issue one ballad in favor of one position and then the next day issue a ballad in favor of the opposite position, written by the same author.
Of course.
And again, it's to appeal to everybody. You buy which one because they're cheaply printed, they're cheaply bought.
Go ahead.
And is there any sense of who these authors are? Are they, again,
they're
of the
mostly
same ranks?
Anonymous. I mean, there was no sense of copyright in that period. So these things would be commissioned, or the printer might actually just steal an earlier one and change a few lines and some of the ornaments and reissue it as a new ballad. They often say new ballad, but in fact it's a reissued ballad. Or they're reissuing various aspects of the ballad. So the authors tend to be anonymous, although there were some very popular authors. Martin Parker and Lawrence Price became specialized in ballad writing. And Martin Parker's a really wily guy. He's an example of somebody who would write in favor of, there were a lot of widows in the early 17th century because of the wars that were going on. And so there was a consciousness of the fact that there were a lot of widows. And he would write a ballad in favor of marrying widows. They're old. But they tend not to wander. You don't have to worry about them as much as the young women who are, good looking. And they tend to be wealthier. And then he'd write another ballad in favor of maids, young maids, and how horrible it is that people are marrying widows. And, the maids are being cheated out of their youth and their desire to have, a full sexual loving life because these old widows are taking away their opportunities.
So I wanted to ask specifically about the English Broadside Ballad Archive. What is the archive, and what's the work that you're undertaking with the archive?
Well, the archive, its goal is to make these artifacts accessible. And the irony of the Broadside Ballad and the archive is that in the period they were extraordinarily accessible. Mm-hmm. They were everywhere. You saw them. You heard. You couldn't walk from point A to point B in London without hearing people screaming out the tunes, trying to sell or hawk ballads on the streets. They're posted up everywhere. But today, out of these millions of the 17th century, only about 8,000 to 10,000 survive, and they are guarded heavily by the libraries that own them. So that even someone like myself, who's a fairly advanced scholar in my field, I have to work very hard to get access, and I'm often denied access to these ballads. So my initial goal in starting the archive was to get these things out there so that people could see them and hear them. Appreciate this popular street culture that has, up to really the last decade, been pretty silent. People don't know, but people read Shakespeare.
Right.
They read court culture, but they don't know that there's thriving street culture that in literature and art and music that was far more prominent than Shakespeare. So the archive and the few, areas in which these things have been published. They've been published either as facsimile volumes, which makes them very difficult to read because they're in black letter, and black letter, unless you're trained to read it, is hard to read. Mm. Or they're in modern editions where you lose the ornament and they're just transcribed. And the goal of EBA is to present facsimiles where you can see exactly the way they looked as we have received them in history. And that may not be as they came off the press, because collectors would cut them in half and paste them into their album books. Mm. And if it's in two parts, which the big ones of the heyday period were, they would cut them and trim them and paste them one side on one book and the other part on the other side of the book, facing pages. So we show that. But then we reassemble the ballot and show it as a ballot facsimile, not simply an album facsimile. And then we also transcribe it. But what we do in our transcriptions is we keep the formatting and the ornament in Photoshop. The graduate students and the undergraduates, we have a huge team. There's been over 150 people worked on EBA to date. So there's this, that's one of my colleagues referred to it, a sweatshot, active, putting these things together. And it's a lovely, I'm particularly fond of the facsimile transcriptions, because you can see all the ornament, the formatting, but you can also read it easily, and you can print it off on a single sheet of paper, so students can really access it that way. And then finally, they're recorded, they're sung, and you can hear the tunes.
Which is actually a perfect segue, so maybe we can get a sense of what the ballads sound like. We'll play right now. This is the Husbandman's Delight, if you want to introduce it really briefly.
Okay, The Husbandman's Delight. This is an example of actually a later ballad of the period. It's from 1691, and its full title is New Playhouse Song of the Husbandman's Delight, Suiting the Humors of a Country Life. And that title is very significant, because it's a sign of a change in the ballad form and of the ballad, what's going on in terms of the gestation of ballads, because the theater is starting to absorb ballad culture and incorporate more song in it. And with that, it uses more instrumentation. Ballads of the earlier period were sung a cappella, that is, without instrumentation, just on the street, anyone would sing it, or in their home, or in the workhouse, or in the milking shed. The ballads of the theater, which become eventually ballad operas, which in higher form become the actual opera that we know today, the ballad of the theater would have instrumentation because it's for a higher class. The street ballads start then imitating because they want to, you know, sound sophisticated too. And so you start getting ballads that can be, the ethnomusicologists recognize that they can actually be suited to instrumentation. So this ballad is a ballad that is actually played, sung to the harpsichord. It's sung by Revel Carr, who was our first ethnomusicologist, and Temo Coroscelli, who is a staff member in the music department here, and he's the one who's also playing the harpsichord. He's coming in the refrain. And despite this sort of elevation in instrumentation being added, it's still a song about country delights. It's a song about harvest time. It's sung to the song Harvest Home. It has complaints in it, as all common people do, about paying taxes, and especially having to pay the parson's tariff. But it's a celebration nevertheless, of life and drink and a little bit of sex, as you'll hear too.
Well, if you have any questions for Dr. Fummerton, you can call in while the music's playing. The number is 805-893-2424. This is Radio Causeway.
But how can a farmer pay his rent? Pay his wife and clout. She'll lie in. I'll kiss Bonnie Bess with the white skin. I'll kiss Bonnie Bess with the white skin.
White skin, white skin.
I'll kiss Bonnie Bess with the white skin. I'll kiss Bonnie Bess with the white skin. Hang up sorrow and cast away care. Ne'er let an honest man drown in despair. What needs that? What needs that? Oh, grief could never yet pay a man's debt. Oh, grief could never yet pay a man's debt.
Pay a man's debt. Pay a man's debt.
Oh, grief could never yet pay a man's debt.
Oh, grief could never yet pay a man's debt.
We'll toss up our ale till we cannot stand, and hoy for the honor of old England. Old England. Old England, and hoy for the honor of old England, and hoy for the honor of old England.
Old England, old England, and hoy for the honor of old England, and hoy for the honor of old England.
Hi, this is your local cartoonist, Molly Kuhls, writer and illustrator of the children's book Under the Snape Tree, The Wamboozling of a Village. And you're listening to Radio Causeway with Pav and Tim on KCSB 91.9 FM Santa Barbara.
Welcome back to Radio Causeway. This is Pav.
And I'm Tim.
We're joined in studio, if you're just joining us, with Patricia Fomerton, professor of English here at UCSB, and also the director of the English Broadside Ballad Archive.
Welcome back. So I wanted to ask, after hearing that, where would people typically hear the ballads? And I've read and heard interviews you've done in the past about the alehouse and the community that the Broadside Ballads promote and kind of cultivate.
Well, yeah, you'd hear a ballad anywhere other than in church, although you'd actually also hear versions of ballads in church. The church got savvy and started incorporating ballad tunes in their litanies. So, on the streets, in the home, in the milk house, milkmaids would sing them, and in the ale house. There are a lot of ale house songs, songs like this one, which celebrate drink, and male bonding in particular. This is a song, it's "Come Boys, Come, Come Boys, Come." And at one point he says, "My gammer says she'll quickly cry out, and I must provide a midwife and clout." Gammer is the equivalent of saying "my old lady." Which is an expression that men use today to talk about their wives. And he goes on to say, "She'll lie in, she'll lie in. And while she's doing that, I'll kiss Bonnie Bess with the white skin." So, you know, his wife's going to have a baby, but it's not going to stop him from fooling around.
Naughty, naughty.
And I know. So, you know, the guys, there's a lot of calling out of guys' names, male bonding, almost a homosocial, not homosexual, but homosocial, where they'll say, I'll kiss the pint that's going on. Now, that's not the only. The women get to sing, too. And they sing in the milk house, and there's a song we won't have time to play about the innocent shepherd and the crafty wife. It's a dialogue between a man and a woman, but actually the woman there is the one who's really got the upper hand. The husband keeps complaining that he's cold in the refrain, and the audience would have, or the people listening or singing would have known perfectly well it's a reference to cuckolding, and that the wife is, you know, he's saying, "I'm cuckold," and she says, "Well, I spin and I weave," and he says, "But I think you're spinning and weaving outside of the house." And, you know, and the reference is to, of course, her having sex and outside the house and making him a cuckold. That means having horns on his head. So the women get their voice too, and there's one ballad in particular that I love called Anne Wallen's Lamentation, where the woman gets a voice tragically on her death. There are, it's part of a tradition of what are called goodnight ballads, and goodnight ballads are ballads that are called goodnight because it's the last words that someone speaks before they're hung. And these bells, you ask where they're sung. This would have been sung at an execution, and it would have been sold at the execution, and it would have been sold while the person is being executed, in sung in the voice of the person being executed. So you're seeing a woman. In this case, she murdered her husband. So it's a husband murder ballad. But it would have been sold. She actually did. Anne Walens did murder her husband in 1616, as a ballad says in its title. And while she was being burned at the stake, because executing or killing your husband is petty treason, and the punishment for petty treason is being burned at the stake, while she was being burned, this song would have been sung, and it's her confession, and her saying how, you know, horrible it is that she did this horrible crime to such a loving husband and such a dear man. And of course, it's propaganda on the part of male authors and authorities of the period to tell women not to mess around with your husbands, do what they say. I think we're going to have time to play a little of it, and you'll hear her saying, you know, women, you should seldom speak unless directly she her words repeat. In other words, be chaste, silent, and obedient. But at the same time, what's so fascinating about this ballad is that she then tells the story of what she did wrong and why it was so horrible for her to kill her husband. And what happens is, in the course, and we're not going to probably get to all of it, these things can be very long. This is a narrative ballad. It goes on for 8.5 minutes, and it's sung by an undergraduate, Rebecca Mounts, who actually rushed it to get it done in 8.5 minutes. But in the course of telling her story, she says, you know, he came home drunk, and I was cursing him and saying he was a drunken knave and errant sot. And he got up and he hit me on the ear, and I wouldn't stop yelling at him. And I hit him, and I stabbed him in the stomach with his tool, which is, he was a turner. And so his tool was his chisel. It's a very phallic moment where she's turning the chisel back on, the tool back on him. But it's at that moment you realize that this is a ballad about wife abuse. Mm-hmm. Now, in the period, would they have heard that? Some, yes. Many men would say, yeah, this woman's getting what she deserves. And yes, you know, it ends with the moral, now women don't do what I did. But on the other hand, it's spoken in a woman's voice. And so that subject position is heard. And that that abuse is heard, too. And it's even seen in the woodcuts, when you see her in one woodcut stabbing the husband, and in the other she's wrapped up in, tied to the stake, burning in the flames, and a bunch of soldiers are pointing their long staffs at her. So the tables have been turned, and she's bound and engulfed in her punishment. But, you know, there are some women, and maybe some men, who would see in this and hear in this ballad the woman's position and sympathize with it. So every kind of subject position gets voiced in a ballad, and that's why it sort of fits almost every place, depending on what kind of ballad you have at hand.
Where can people find the woodcuts and be able to see the broadside ballads? If they're at home on a computer, they can see them online?
Oh, they're all, because we reproduce exactly how they looked, you can see them on the website, eba.english.ucsb.edu.
There's also links to that at radiocausway.org.
Yeah, I think if you even type in EBA, you'll get it as your first or second hit.
I think you have to do EBA UCSB. Makes it a little easier.
Oh, does it? Okay.
There are all these other kinds of EBAs.
There are, but we're rising to the top.
Well, we're going to hear a little bit of Anne Walens' Lament and then come back briefly. So enjoy the first couple of minutes and get a sense of how the narrative of this song progresses.
It's Radio Causeway.
Great God that sees all things that here are done, keeping thy court with thy celestial Son, hear her complaint that hath so sore offended. Forgive my fact before my life is ended. Ah, me the shame unto all womankind. soul, then I am she whose deeds are black and foul. Then take heed, wives, be to your husbands kind, and bear this lesson truly in your mind. Let not your tongues or sway to reason's bounds, which in your rage your utmost rancor sounds. A woman that is wise should seldom speak, unless discreetly she her words repeat. Oh, would that I had thought of this before, which now to think on makes my heart full sore. Then should I not have done this deed so foul, the which hath stained my immortal soul.
And we're back on Radio Causeway. We are joined in studio with Dr. Patricia Fumerton, professor of English at UC Santa Barbara and the director of the English Broadside Ballad Archive, also the recipient of the 2009 British Society for 18th Century Studies Digital 18th Century Prize. So, Dr. Fumerton, one more time, where can people find the website?
At ebba.english.ucsb.edu, or you could type in English Broadside Ballads or ebba UCSB in a Google search.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. This was really fascinating.
It was a pleasure.
Hi, this is Dr. Aaron Sell from the Center for Evolutionary Psychology at UCSB. You're listening to Radio Causeway with Pav and Tim on KCSB 91.9 FM, Santa Barbara.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
It's time for strange news. So, I've got something, I got a couple things, but what I got up first, this is reported from the Democrat and Chronicle in Rochester on May 26th. Driver Brian Parslow, 19, injured himself and three passengers when he crashed into a tree near Wheatland, New York in May. He was playing Hold Your Breath with the other passengers and passed out.
Don't you play that game all the time?
Yes!
No.
That's not even when driving?
That is not a good idea. Yeah.
See that? That's your IQ, buddy. Zero.
Definitely. You don't do that. If you're driving a car, you do not play. Let's see how long we can hold our breath.
No, I don't think I'd do that otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah.
The idea of passing out just doesn't appeal to me.
Yeah, well, especially when you're driving a vehicle of any sorts. Yeah. Yeah. Even a bike, a skateboard. I think those are all bad ideas.
Stellar. Stellar. That's all I have to say. Well, you know, more news, strange news to follow up on. I mean, there's a lot of complaining and griping about handouts. I mean, this
no
is...
No kidding!
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding, indeed. People can't stop talking about, you know, the big banks, everyone gets a handout. People on welfare, they get a hangout. Handout. And they get to hang out, waiting for their handout.
Well, I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, it doesn't sound good. Last week, we talked about the IRS giving out handouts to prison inmates. So this time, maybe at the other end of the spectrum.
Just a bit outside.
This comes from the New York Press. In the latest accounting from Environmental Working Group records, the Weekly News Press revealed that such agrarian handout seekers, these are people who are getting government subsidies, hence agrarian handout seekers, included Manhattan billionaires Leonard Lauder and David Rockefeller. You might recognize that name. And Rockefeller's son, Mark, as well. So two Rockefellers on the list. In fact, for now 10 years, the federal government has handed Mark $54,500 a year not to grow anything on his 5,000 acres in Idaho.
Holy cow!
Pretty phenomenal. And according to the press, Mark never intended to, in that he only bought the land because it was adjacent to the upscale socialite hangout South Fork Fly Fishing Lodge that he runs next door.
That's a great reason to give him, you know, $54,000 a year.
Yeah, not your family farmer.
No, not exactly. Not exactly. So we got about 10 minutes or so left in Radio Causeway. If you're just tuning in, you'd miss the interview we did earlier with Dr. Patricia Fumerton, professor in English department at UC Santa Barbara and the director of the English Broadside Ballad Archive. You can find the podcast later today at radiocauseway.org. You can find links to that at kcsb.org. We're going to get back into some music. Right now I got some new music from the Spires local band. Their new album, A Way of Seeing, just came out. And we're doing some more ballad-inspired music. So this is the Ballad of the Spires. You're on Radio Causeway.
Hi, this is Chuck from Freelance Wales, and you are listening to Radio Causeway with Bob and Tim on KCSB 91.9 FM, Santa Barbara.
Our theme has been ballads. If you've been wondering why, well, you might have missed the first half of our show where we had Patricia Fumerton, professor of English here at UCSB and director of the English Ballad or Broadside Ballad Archive, joining us. And if you did miss the interview and you'd like to check it out, you can either find it at radiocauseway.org or at kcsb.org. They'll be up later today.
You can also subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or check us out on Facebook. Next week, we've got a great show lined up. We'll be speaking with Dr. Aaron Belkin, Executive Director of UC Santa Barbara's Palm Center and Associate Professor of Political Science at San Francisco State University, on the military's controversial Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy.
Till then,
have a good week, everybody.
Radio Causeway is a presentation of KCSB Public Affairs. The opinions expressed were those of the individual speakers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of KCSB, the associated students, or the regents of the University of California.
If you have a comment or wish to respond, please address correspondence to KCSB, University Center, Room 3185A, University of California, Santa Barbara, California, 93106. This is KCSB 91.9 FM, Santa Barbara.